Let's just pray again. Lord, at this time of celebrating harvest, we give thanks that we still want to hear your word. Just pray that somehow you would still in our hearts what you want to tell us this morning. Amen. We're still talking about Mark, so this isn't a sermon about harvest. Well, that may please you, it may not. But we're continuing with our series on Mark, which I think it's important to do that. I suppose I have to start off by admitting, well, I don't really have to, but I will. I have to admit that it's been a difficult sermon for me to write. Mainly because it's not an easy passage to understand, and those that heard it read just now will probably feel that way as well. I am encouraged, actually, by the knowledge that most commentators also find difficulty with this passage. There's so many different interpretations if you read the commentaries. And some commentators don't even try. They just sort of say, this is what was said, let's get on to the next bit. I read and reread the passage. I also looked at Matthew's and Luke's account. But that didn't help much because they were just copied and pasted from Mark's gospel. Peter also had something to say in the letter ascribed to him. Having done all that, I came up with some sort of sermon. Fairly short, perhaps, even for me, but the sermon here goes. Make of it what you will. I don't know whether the Transfiguration was an actual photographical event, or was it just a subjective vision of the disciples, or whether it was just a story invented. I don't know, so I wouldn't give an opinion on that. I honestly do find the idea of a subjective vision difficult to justify, given that there were three disciples present. It would be unusual for three of them all to have the same vision, if it wasn't in some way real. Very quick summary of the story goes like this. Jesus went up a mountain with Peter, James, and John. The appearance of Jesus changed brilliantly. Moses and Elijah appeared. Peter suggested making three shelters or tents or whatever, one for each of them. Then a cloud appeared. It isn't particularly unusual at the top of a mountain, perhaps. But then they heard a voice saying, this is my son, listen to him. Disciples then saw that Jesus was on his own. And that was basically the story. What then does it mean? This is what I think. You're quite entitled to disagree, and in some ways I hope you do. I would enjoy that. It makes life interesting, but it's often said that the words the disciples heard were the same as those at Jesus' baptism. They most certainly are not. At the baptism, words were addressed to Jesus. You are my son, in whom I'm pleased. At the Transfiguration, the voice was addressed to Peter, James, and John. This is my son. Quite a significant difference. Jesus was changed in front of them. And I think the whole Transfiguration was more for the disciples' benefit, if you like, than it was about Jesus. Although it was about Jesus, of course it was. But it seems almost to be confirming what Peter said in Caesarea Philippi, that Jesus was the Messiah. I think it was confirming that more than anything else. In Peter's second letter, he saw the Transfiguration as foretelling the glory, the future glory of Jesus. What about the appearance of Moses and Elijah? Quite a weird event, I would have thought. But I don't think that's a significant thing. It's significant, but don't think that is the significant thing. I think actually it's the disappearance of Moses and Elijah that's more significant than their actual appearance. See, in the Old Testament, Moses had a similar experience with shining lights and talking clouds. One major difference was that Moses' transfiguration, it was a transfiguration, was only a reflective glory, and then it faded away. Not so with Jesus. His glory never faded away. As a result of Moses playing a fairly big part in the Exodus, he became a significant figure in Jewish culture and faith. Well, what about Elijah? It seems strange to me that Elijah occupied such an important place in Judaism. To this day, when celebrating the Seder meal at the Passover, a separate place is set for Elijah in case he should turn up for the meal, which is expected to. As a prophet, to me, Isaiah seems to have most to say about the forthcoming Messiah. And, of course, there's a book labelled Isaiah, or three of them, if you like, in one place, written one for Elijah. But Peter suggests that three tents are built, or booths, or shelters, whatever word you like. Three tents are built for Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. Three tents. Think about it. One for each of them. Peter's actually regarding Moses, Elijah, and Jesus as equal to one another. To Peter, remember, that would have been a compliment that he was paying to Jesus. Because Moses and Elijah were extremely important characters. And he was really saying Jesus was as important as they were. Jesus putting his foot in to get them. Remember, all these people on the mountain were Jewish and thought like Jews. Moses and Elijah, up to the arrival of Jesus, were the key players. Then, of course, the cloud appears. This, in the Old Testament, was usually a sign of the presence of God, as it did with Moses on the mountain and when leading the Israelites through the wilderness. The voice booms out, "This is my son." Was this another rebuke for Peter? "Hey, you three, Moses and Elijah are not Jesus' equals." Was that the message? I think it was. Particularly when you read what happens next. No. Jesus was over there. The voice was over there. The disciples had to turn towards the voice. Then they turned back. Moses and Elijah had disappeared. There was just Jesus on his own. Was this a way of saying, "You can forget Moses and Elijah. It's now all about Jesus"? Funny we sing that in one of the songs that we sing very often, don't we? It's all about Jesus. There was a further rebuke to come. The voice said, "Listen to him." Something they hadn't really been doing. It's a bit like when your mum or your dad says, "Just listen to me." It's not a nice way of saying things. They're perhaps just a little bit annoying. Listen to what I'm saying. Listen to Jesus. They're being told, are fighting. They haven't been taking it in at all that Jesus is going to be killed and 3 days rise again. They haven't been taking it in at all what kind of person Jesus was, what kind of Messiah he was. The voice was affirming to Peter, James, and John, in my view, especially Peter, of course, that Jesus' teaching was spot on. That he'd got his message right. He'd got his job description right. Would all this actually make any difference to the disciples' understanding of what Jesus said? We'll find out when we work through the rest of the month.